ever of actual improper behavior with any commission employees. The task force recommended a brighter line between staff promoting its side of the case and staff assisting the commission in deciding the case. The task force acknowledged that the commission does need expert advice from staff who are not involved in promoting a position in the case. The Dash 2 amendment ignores that need and categorizes advice even from advisory staff who are uninvolved with the staff case as ex-party contacts. That means that the commission cannot hire its own staff and receive advice without that advice being declared an ex-party contact. The Dash 2 amendments do not address a key issue that the task force addressed, and that is, how do you balance the need for adequate technical advice with assuring that the parties that the staff does not exercise undue influence over the decision? The task force identified that as something that needs to be figured out. It is a balancing act. It is not something that can easily be determined. The proposal erodes the commission's ability to issue timely, technically sound decisions. We are dealing with cases in the hundreds of millions of dollar category. If we get to a decision and we are drafting an order 2 days before a statutory deadline, and the commission needs advice from a staff person on a particular issue, the commission has to make a decision. Do I ask for advice from that staff person, or do I delay the decision? And in some instances, delaying the decision would result in a $100 million revenue impact. In addition, this process will impose delay, will inject delay into commission proceedings. A one-week delay, one-week delay could cost as much as $5 million in the PGE and PP&L rate cases that are scheduled for decision in September.
Okay.
The technical problems, Mr. Reichman mentioned the technical problems. I don't think the technical problems are cured in the Dash 3 amendment. Every time I pick up these bills, I find another technical problem. One of the problems that I have with the Dash 3 amendment is that, as far as I can tell, the hearings officer cannot get advice from the Attorney General's office without that advice being an ex-party contact. And the final thing is, the amendment is premature. The commission heard loud and clear from the task force that we've got a problem with the perception of fairness in our proceedings. We've initiated a collaborative process with all of our stakeholders, not just the telephone companies, to address the detailed intricacies of commission proceedings and to figure out the best way to balance the need for adequate staff with the need for assuring parties to our proceedings that they're being treated fairly.
Are there any questions of Mr. Barkin? Thank you. I will make a comment in that if the people that avail themselves of the services the most have such a strong sense of not being treated fairly and of staff being heavy-handed, then something has to be done.
Madam Chair, I haven't heard the term heavy-handed. I've heard the term there's a perception of fairness problem, and it's because what the commission has tried to do over the years is provide a balance between efficient procedures and fairness, and we've got to address that problem, absolutely.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Paul Graham, Assistant Attorney General. I'm Chief Counsel to the PUC. I've reviewed this bill, and it does have technical problems, and I think we need to work out the technical problems. I'll allude to just one of them. On line 26, page 2, it refers to communications by an Assistant Attorney General. As Mr. Barkin has pointed out, there may be a problem in this bill and that the Assistant Attorney General cannot talk to the hearings officer about problems with an order. Another problem is that there has to be a communication made in response to a request from the commissioners. That means if I spot a problem, I can't say anything about it. I suppose we could probably get around this by having the commission write up a standing request that if I find a problem with any order, I'm supposed to come forward and tell them about it. One other point I wanted to make, the policy set forth on line 26 with regard to AG contacts has been a policy for over 20 years. I started at the AG's office in 1977. I talked to my then boss, Jack Sokolowski, I've now replaced him, about developing a policy where the person who represented the staff would not advise the commission. We put that policy in place, and it's been in place for over 20 years, and U.S. West or Quest is aware of that. They're aware of that. They know that this practice that's set out in the amendments is one that the AG has followed for over two decades.
Okay, thank you. Any questions at all? Anybody have any questions? Yes.
Yes. I probably could have asked this of Ms. Lang when she was up, but Mr. Bargan, I know that we met in the third floor conference room, it seems like eons ago, but it was earlier this session with Ms. Lang, talking then, I think, in the context of that other House bill and the issues that Quest had that dealt more with ex parte contact and procedures in the hearings process. Have there been any discussions ongoing from that?
No. No, there were some brief discussions. The discussions were the PUC isn't interested in legislation this session on ex parte contacts. What the PUC is doing is initiating this collaborative, and we are going to be talking to all the stakeholders in some detail and trying to develop a comprehensive proposal that addresses the ex parte issue, as well as a number of other issues that the task force raised, but we haven't had any discussions beyond that.
Well, I'm glad that those discussions are going to go forward. Any other questions? Okay, is anybody else here to testify on House Bill 2551? I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2551. The hearing on it. We're not going to go into work session right now on it. I would like to thank you for your testimony. I would like to have the hearing on House Bill 3908. I am not going to move any amendments today. We might have a work session on it, taking it to the floor without recommendation.
3908.
Okay. Is anybody here to testify on House Bill 3908? Randy, you want to come forward? Counselor?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You should have the -6 amendments to 3908, and I'll have Mr. Tucker explain those to you. And I believe that there are some additional changes that he may be working on that will address Representative Shatterly's concerns.
Okay, Mr. Tucker. Good morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, good morning. For the record, my name is Randy Tucker, 1000 Friends of Oregon. And we had a hearing on this last week. As you recall, the bill has since been amended in two ways. Let me explain those briefly to you. Both of these are pursuant to suggestions by Mr. Chandler, John Chandler. One of which he made in the hearing the other day, let me get the amendments in front of me here. If you will look at line 24 on page 1 of the -6 amendments, there's a definition of party here. The question was raised at the hearing last week as to whether the provisions of this bill applied only to applicants or people pursuing a development approval, and not to opponents, and we certainly never intended it to be one-sided in that way. And so to make this clear, we have added a definition of party as any individual who testifies or participates in the proceeding, basically, either pro or con on a particular decision. And to the extent that they have a family or business relationship with a member of the decision-making body, then the provisions of this bill would apply. So that should take care of that question. The second question wasn't fully aired in the last hearing, but I think nevertheless, I wouldn't call this a fatal flaw of the bill. I'd call it a fatal virtue. We think this bill should cover campaign contributions, but I guess it would be fair to say that this issue in this connection is not quite ripe. And so we have eliminated all references to campaign contributions from the bill. And let's see, you can see that on in the amendment on line 4, delete lines 18 through 22 of the printed bill. That gets rid of it in connection with local decisions. And then in the previous set of amendments, as well as this one, LCDC is added to the bill. And in the Dash 5 amendments, there was language on campaign contributions in that section, and that has been eliminated from the language in the Dash 6 amendments. So that language is gone. There is a third issue that has arisen and is not embodied in these printed amendments, and that's described in the one-pager that I have distributed to you this morning, and that is the issue of mandatory remand. We continue to support mandatory remand in cases where LUBA finds that a reasonable person would believe that there's a conflict of interest in a land use decision. And we have, this bill gives LUBA some discretion, of course, to determine whether or not a reasonable person would find that, and that is embodied in the reasonable person test itself. We would oppose, I believe there's some other amendments that are not maybe printed yet, that would change the word shall remand to may remand, and we would oppose that. We think that there ought to be a strong deterrent and a bright line for participants in these decisions to that would let them know they always have to disclose these kinds of relationships and recuse themselves if they constitute a conflict. However, I'm personally not a fan of mandatory minimum sentences and believe in letting judges judge to a certain extent. And so that's why we've drafted up this conceptual amendment that you have before you, which says essentially that if you've got a unanimous local government decision and there's a violation of this bill, but it had no impact on the outcome of that decision, that LUBA may, either by reviewing the transcript of the local proceedings or by an evidentiary hearing, determine that there was no impact, and then they would have the freedom to uphold rather than the requirement to remand that local decision. And so this is obviously not drafted by legislative counsel yet, but I hope that it addresses the concern about the rigidity of the mandatory remand.
Any questions for Mr. Tucker?
Okay. I do.
All right.
Thank you. Randy, I was just now, I was looking up some of the language in the Dash 6 to see how it corresponds to language in Chapter 244, which, of course, governs all public bodies. And I'm a little struck here. We have, and I had not seen this before until just now, ORS 244-135, and that's method of handling conflicts by planning commission members. And that's a statute specific to the very bodies that this bill gets at. And for instance, it says, in some respects, it's stricter, a member of a city or county planning commission shall not participate in any commission proceeding, which sounds to me like they don't even deliberate.
That's...
Okay, if there's... And then it talks about if you know, in which any of the following has a direct or substantial financial interest, and it talks about then a member or the spouse, brother, sister, or business. How on earth how does that now relate to this? And are we? I'm not sure that these quite meet. And are we creating distinctions that if you comply with 3908, if you look at 3908, if you're a planning commission member, say, well, okay, this is okay. Are you putting yourself at risk of being in violation of 244-135? Or if you look at 244-135 and say you're complying with that, are you putting yourself at risk of having violated 3908? I don't see that they quite meet on all four corners.
Madam Chair, Representative Shetterly, first of all, as far as the question of not participating in the proceedings at all, that is in fact what this language is also intended to require. It's not just about voting, but it's participation in the proceedings. And so the 3908 does address that particular question. As far as the relationship between this bill and Chapter 244, Robert Liberty testified last week that in practice, 244 has not succeeded in overturning decisions where conflicts seem clear. However, I didn't mention this earlier today, but I have discussed this issue also with Mr. Chandler, and we agreed to take a look at that if the bill comes out of the House and try to merge, and there was some discussion last week about possibly referring to those standards by reference in order not to create a confusing set of standards. And so I have not looked at 244 yet just because of time. I wanted to address some of the fatal issues up front, and to my understanding, at least with respect to people that are not in the room right now, I did that. So, however, of course, those people are not sitting before me.
Time is kind of
that's
sensitive.
And Madam Chair, that is why we didn't
get
there yet. We wanted to make sure that we took care of some outstanding issues up front.
Time's wings are
eliminating
on the window
opposition
pane.
Was.
Okay. Any other questions? Or does that satisfy you? Or?
Well, no, Madam Chair. The language on lines 27 through 29 of the first page, I thought we were going to. That says the person may not participate in any decision of the commission, and that seems to me to be narrower than shall not participate in any commission proceeding. I think we talked there about the distinction between participating in deliberations and discussions as opposed to the vote, which is the decision, and I don't see that being corrected in the dash sixes either, because I think there is I think that is incongruous with the 244.135, which prohibits participating in the proceeding, because I think it was elsewhere that in the amendments, in the dash twos, it distinguishes between participating in the proceeding and voting, and so that was something that I think is also not correct. And I don't know,
Madam Chair, Representative Shetterly, the dash sixes also make that distinction on line 13 of the dash sixes.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Representative.
Well, that only applies if there is. Well, that actually raised another question. Can we authorize that under this bill if 244 prohibits participation in a proceeding specifically?
Madam Chair, Representative Shetterly, it's intended to. Sounds like we might want to take a closer look at this, but it's definitely intended to. Prohibit participation in the defeat. Oh, I see what you're saying. In this particular case, if a quorum is is absent.
Yeah, 244 doesn't seem to allow for that.
Hmm. Okay. I confess I'm not sure.
I believe you've identified a technical flaw in this bill, Representative Shetterly.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions?
Oh, I've asked enough.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Tucker. We have two other people that would like to testify on this. I'm moving right along, and I would like to remind the audience, too, and the panel that we need to get to floor by 10, and we have one other bill that we need to hear. So could I please call forward Harlan Levy and Linda Ludwig to offer their comments on this bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Linda Ludwig from League of Oregon Cities. I will be brief in my comments. Having just had a chance to look at the Dash 6 amendments and also to look at the conceptual amendments, I would primarily like to say that I think we need to take a good look at the bill and also at 244. It seems to me that much of what we're trying to accomplish in the bill is already accomplished in 244. which does guide the actions of Planning Commission officials as well as elected officials. And there are some aspects of the amendments that do come in conflict of 244. While the bill does raise the bar to some extent for what public officials have to disclose in terms of contracts, my suggestion to the committee would be, if we're going to raise the bar, let's do it across the line with elected officials and not call out simply Planning Commission officials or local elected officials in land use decisions only. If we really want to raise the bar for disclosure on elected officials, let's do it in a comprehensive manner. Let's do it cleanly and take a good look at what we're doing here. As a case in point, in the bill, there is a provision that an elected official may participate with a quorum as needed in the decision. And in the Dash 6 amendment, it calls out that that official cannot vote. They can participate in the decision, but they cannot vote. And again, I think there's some conflicts with 244 and with the intent of the bill and the amendments. So we have some concerns here from the League of Cities. We just wanted to voice those general concerns today and ask the committee to take a more comprehensive look at if they want to move forward with raising the bar and disclosure of elected officials.
Thank you, Ms. Flood. Greg, any questions of this witness? Thank you. Mr. Levy?
Chair Lowe, members of the committee, for the record, Harlan Levy, staff attorney for the Oregon Association of Realtors. I'll be very brief. I spoke on this issue the last time that you had a hearing on it, and I mentioned to you that we would not have a problem with the bill so long as the Luba remand was not mandatory, if it was discretionary. And I do have some amendments, the Dash 7 amendments, that would reflect that change. So I respectfully request that if you do decide to move this bill, that you make it permissive, that Luba be able to consider the facts. I believe Representative Shetterly gave the example the last hearing of a 5-0 unanimous decision with one commission member not disclosing. Why would we undo an otherwise valid decision? And I just want to stress that that is our position, that, you know, let Luba decide, let the attorneys make their arguments, let them make the decision. Don't take the discretion away from them. Thank you. I'll answer any questions you might have as well.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of Mr. Levy? I'm going to close the hearing on 3908. We will not be going to work session. I'm going to open the hearing on 2917 and we are going to, let's see, somebody should, let's starting, huh? No, we did. We're not going to go to work session. It's on for work session. It's on for a work session, and we are considering the dash. Councilor?
Thank you, Chair Lowe. We have the Dash 11 amendment for your consideration today.
Okay. I don't know if those been passed out.
Okay. Actually, Representative Merkley is not here to discuss this. It is the chair's intention. Thank you. Before we get carried away, do you want to hear it?
No, I'm just breathing a sigh of relief.
It is the real chair's intention. I'm under instructions here that we're going to move this to full and let them decide what to do with the Dash 11. So a thorough discussion of the Dash 11 seems to be unkind at this point, because why make them do it twice?
Madam
so,
Chair.
Thank you.
You want a motion?
I do.
I'll move House Bill 2917 without recommendation to the full committee.
No, we're not moving amendments.
We haven't adopted any amendments.
No.
Okay, I'll just move the bill without recommendation to the full committee.
Representative Shetterly moves 2917 to the full without recommendation. Is there any objection? Any conversation about it? We call the roll.
Aye.
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 2917 goes to the full without recommendation. Is there any further business to come before this committee? Anybody else that we skipped that needs to say something on the record? All right, we are adjourned.